Hello, welcome to the April 2023 issue of Money Letter. We have two stories to give you today. One is the lead story, which covers our market analysis, and it's called Questions Abound, But Markets Forge Ahead. And the second story is an investing strategy story. It's called Stocks and Bonds, Volatility Highlights the Value of Dollar Cost Averaging. The main story, Questions Abound, But Markets Forge Ahead, also the first quarter 2023 review. What a ride in the first quarter. The roller coaster got off to a great start in the month of January, with our nine model portfolios gaining between 2.8% for the Vanguard Conservative and 8.7% for the Fidelity Venturesome. Worries about, what else, Fed interest rate policy grew quickly in mid-February as inflation readings came in hotter than expected. Our models shed between 1% and 3% for the month amid the interest rate concerns. Then, a potentially devastating banking crisis hit with Silicon Valley Bank's announcement of a $1.8 billion loss on held securities on March 8th. The banking scare drove the S&P 500 as low as 3,856 on March 13th. But after quick action by the Fed and other regulators, the situation appears to have been contained. At the close of the quarter, the benchmark had risen to 4,109, a gain of 6.6% from mid-March. After an important inflation gauge came in lower than expected, a more sanguine view of interest rates has developed as we enter April. Editor's note, we received a call from a subscriber recently who observed that Money Letter talks about interest rates constantly, and not the root cause, according to the subscriber, out-of-control spending. In next month's issue, as we get closer to a debt ceiling showdown in Washington, we'll take a closer look at that topic. How much more? When it comes to interest rates, the big question investors are asking is what will the Fed do over the next few months and later this year? There is a wide variety of opinion on the subject, ranging from several more hikes to a pause and even cuts in the second half. Fed policymakers are all over the board, too. As we go to press, 10 Fed officials see one additional 25 basis point hike in 2023, indicating a peak or terminal rate at approximately 5.125%. Three Fed officials see two more additional hikes this year, three members see three more hikes, and one sees four more. Only one policymaker sees rates currently at their peak. For perspective, before the banking crisis, it was looking like the Fed Open Market Committee would push the rate up by 50 basis points in March and another 25 or 50 later this year, putting the terminal rate at 5.625%. One additional hike, likely in May, would be consistent with our forecast in the January 2023 issue, waiting for a pause. At that time, we anticipated the Fed hiking by 25 basis points each in February, March, and April. May. This view is looking pretty good, and we're sticking with it. This is important because the threat of higher interest rates is the stock market's kryptonite. But why will the Fed pause soon? A couple of reasons. First, inflation is heading in the right direction, although it's not declining as fast as everyone wants. Second, the recent bank failures will serve to do what the Fed is trying to do, tighten credit. Some analysts feel that banks pulling back on making loans will have the same effect as 150 basis points of Fed hikes. More on that story in a moment. Fed hikes, which work with a significant lag, appear to be getting their desired effect, as you can see in the numbers above. And we have a table with the current economic snapshot in the issue. If we get 25 basis points in May and then a pause, the soft landing scenario, where the economy is not forced into a significant recession, and the Fed keeps credit just tight enough to reduce inflation, remains a possibility. This would create conditions that are as good as can be for stocks. A silver lining? Could the recent stress on the banking sector work out to the individual investor's advantage? Alfonso Pecchiatello of the Macro Compass, www.themacrocompass.com, a former institutional money manager, described the concept of the problems in banking being disinflationary, thus slowing down the Fed interest rate hikes that have been rattling the markets. For a little perspective on what happened, first, it wasn't simply the news about Silicon Valley Bank's problems that caused money to move away from the banks. Pecchiatello points out that outflows have been affecting banks for more than a year now as money market funds try to attract investors after years of negligible yields. Money market funds often offer higher yields to investors than banks because they are incentivized to attract assets under management. The more, the merrier. Conversely, banks usually offer lower deposit rates to increase margins and improve their financial condition. This migration has accelerated recently, forcing banks to liquidate bond holdings at low prices to meet the outflows. Remember, rates have gone up, driving the price of lower-yielding bonds in the bank's portfolios down. In effect, what we've seen at some of the poorly managed banks is a fire sale of high-quality U.S. Treasury securities. This left some banks, not the big money center banks, but smaller, somewhat mismanaged regional banks, in precarious overall financial condition. When news of the fire sale hit, depositors exited quickly and exacerbated the problem. Stepping back, the result, according to Macro Compass, is a disinflationary effect as other wobbly banks are forced to tighten credit and commit resources and capital into strengthening their balance sheets. Since loan making is critical to our economy, tighter credit means less growth and disinflation follows. This process, the Macro Compass says, was underway well before the banking stress was revealed. Pecchiatello expects a ton of volatility in the months ahead, and he is calling for a disinflationary recession. Moneyletter has spent a lot of time discussing the R word. The question always comes back to, will it be shallow or deep? We still believe any recession, if we actually have one, will be shallow. Current advice. Here are some model portfolio trades for this month. There are three fund upgrade trades which were announced in the March 30th hotline. Moneyletter moderate investors were advised to sell 50% of Invesco S&P 500 Pure Value, ticker RPV, with the proceeds going to buy Invesco QQQ. That's a large cap growth fund. In the Moneyletter Venturesome model, sold iShares Latin America 40 ETF, ILF, and bought Oakmark International, OAKIX. In the Fidelity Venturesome model, sold Fidelity Latin America, FLATX, and bought Fidelity International Capital Appreciation, FIVFX. The first quarter 2023 report. Model performance for the quarter was good relative to our benchmark. Excluding the lower risk conservative models, five of the six moderate and venturesome models beat the asset allocation average. The Moneyletter Venturesome, Moneyletter Moderate, and Fidelity Venturesome models all exceeded 5% for the quarter. The one laggard was the Moneyletter Moderate, which held a large position in RPV. Value sagged during March as investor anticipation of lower interest rates later this year drove tech shares higher. We halved the position at month end. Details on page 4 of the issue. In table 2, you'll notice the top three positions were occupied by large cap growth funds. This group surged during the second half of March. The next five on the list are types of international stock funds, which all benefited from a drop in the U.S. dollar. Now, for the story on stock and bond, volatility highlights the value of dollar cost averaging. Things can change quickly in the investment world. For example, during the early days of last month, odds were heavily in favor of a 50 basis point hike at the Fed's March meeting, and a terminal rate about 60 basis points higher than had been previously expected. This relatively hawkish stance was in reaction to the latest inflation data, which had interrupted the downward positive trend. Bond yields were peaking ahead of the Fed, and stocks were in the process of giving back solid gains from the first 6 weeks of the year. Now, after only a few weeks, bond yields have plummeted amid several bank failures and concern about the overall condition of the sector. Although we are not going through a credit catastrophe like the subprime mortgage crisis that was 2007 to 2010, we are in the middle of a tricky interest rate exposure issue. Banks like Silicon Valley, and Signature were recently holding large amounts of U.S. Treasury bonds, which are extremely high quality, but were bought at much lower interest rates. Their value in the marketplace has gone down just when depositors were looking to withdraw. Both stocks and bonds have been volatile over the last 2 months, and no one could have predicted the turn of events. Throughout the first quarter's market gyrations, MoneyLetter's advice has been to stay calm, stay the course, and if you have investable cash, to invest it for the long term. Over the years, we have suggested dollar-cost averaging your way into the markets, which can be a wise long-term strategy in turbulent times. Given the current uncertainty and market volatility, let's refresh our knowledge of dollar-cost averaging. Alternatively, some of you may be looking to raise some cash to have a more comfortable amount in an emergency fund or to replenish your retirement cash reserves. With that in mind, we will also look at some considerations for raising cash in the current environment. Dollar cost averaging. The basic premise of dollar cost averaging is that set dollar investments are made at regular intervals of time, often monthly, bi-monthly, or quarterly, into mutual funds or other investments. While the amount of money invested in each period remains the same, the number of shares you acquire will differ based on the share prices at the time of the investments. In most cases, this will end up being to the benefit of the investor. When the markets are down, the regular investments will purchase more shares. And when prices are higher, fewer shares are bought. At the end, the number of shares purchased will most often be greater than if one had made a lump sum investment. Let's look at a simple example. Say you have $10,000 ready to go into the markets. You could invest the entire amount on day one or spread that out over a number of time periods. For simplification, we will use five periodic investments and rounding shares acquired. And we have a table here of five different purchase prices over the course of a predetermined time period. A lump sum $10,000 investment in period one would have purchased 556 shares. Utilizing dollar cost averaging, the same $10,000 would have purchased 573 shares, netting an additional 17 shares, and at an average share price of $17.45. That's just below the day one share price. That's quite a benefit, especially when you apply the technique to larger amounts and longer investing periods. This approach is a mechanical approach to the buy side of investing. It removes the emotion from the decision-making process, both on the upside, fear of missing out, and the downside, panic selling when the market is plunging. Sure, in the hypothetical example above, an investor may have been better off if they had invested a lump sum at a lower price, but there is no way to know when the investment is at a low point or if it will decline further. Market timing is generally a losing battle. If you are still in your income earning years, dollar cost averaging is a disciplined way to build towards a future goal, college educations, retirement, etc. Alternatively, if you receive a lump sum that you can invest, dollar cost averaging allows you to ease into the market over time, reducing timing risk. And if you participate in a 401k plan at work that invests directly from your paycheck, you are utilizing dollar cost averaging even if you don't realize it. No-load mutual funds and ETFs are ideal for this strategy since no commissions are incurred. There may be a small ticket charge if you use a discount brokerage. Dollar cost averaging works best over longer time frames or in times of market volatility. As we know, markets can have prolonged periods of difficulty, but they do advance over the long term. On the reverse side, freeing up cash. Things are quite different if you need to free up some cash from your investment portfolio, say to increase your emergency fund in a time of crisis, or to replenish the cash reserves you draw your living expenses from in retirement. At first glance, using dollar cost averaging strategy to sell investments to provide cash might seem logical, but it is not wise. Reverse dollar cost averaging means you sell more shares at lower prices and fewer shares at high share prices, resulting in a larger portion of your portfolio shareholdings being liquidated. That undermines the ability of your portfolio to capitalize on potential future market gains. Selling a portion of your investments to generate cash needs to be much more strategic. Here are some tactics to consider if you need to raise your cash from your investment portfolio. As always, consult with your financial or tax advisor first. Rebalance. Look at your overall asset allocation. If a decline in stocks has left you with a higher than desired exposure to bonds or bond funds, consider selling the bonds first. Revisit your holdings. You may have investments that no longer fit your strategy, or long-term holdings whose outlook or qualities have changed for the worse over the years. Those may be sale candidates. Harvest tax losses. Do you have securities that are trading at a loss in a taxable account? You could consider selling to raise cash. A loss on the sale of a security can be used to offset up to $3,000 in realized investment gains and/or ordinary income annually, compared to higher short-term or ordinary income rates. That's it for April. Thanks for listening.